The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. I am Seth. Our phone number is 602-508-0960. And, you know, one of the small challenges, and we only have small challenges as talk show hosts, but one of the small challenges, at least that I have, is determining if a story has been so covered or not that it's not worthwhile you covering it. But yet it's kind of important. And you worry about whether, you know, it's just been already soaked up by so many others. In other words, has there been a surfeit of coverage of it that it's pointless for me to do it as well? But it does kind of hit a theme, this one particular story. It does kind of hit a theme that has been near and dear to a lot of your hearts and certainly my heart and my mind, my soul really even, that I did kind of want to do something with it, and maybe a little bit different than most other commentators, maybe. So bear with me if you haven't paid attention to it, because I think there's something important here and something important unsaid here as well. And just to let you know, I do want to get back into this big, big, big story of the President's White House counsel, Pat Cipollone's letter to the Democrats, which I think is hugely important. And I'm going to get back to that in a few moments. But first, on this nature of political dialogue, you've heard me say that I, for a long time, have believed the left does not think that conservatives have a legitimate political point of view or political philosophy. And that, you know, we have to be, well, not physically necessarily destroyed, although Antifa tries to do that for the left. They kind of have that provisional part of the leftist movement, if you will. But certainly silenced, certainly shut up, certainly having their First Amendment rights curbed and cribbed and censored through a variety of ways. And you see it also with the attempts to delegitimize the 2016 election, which resulted in Donald Trump's presidency, the delegitimacy having started basically the day after his election, as I ran through the impeachment motions and statements that commenced in February of 2017 and have culminated in what we have now, which is a serious impeachment inquiry over the least impeachable thing I can think of, a conversation with the president of the Ukraine that I think is wholly innocent. We'll come back to that, and we'll come back to this letter the White House counsel wrote, because I think it really is a turning point in the conversation over impeachment to the degree the letter gets attention, which is why I've tweeted it out, and I'm asking others to take the link and tweet out the full letter. Not a story about the letter, not the CNN take on the letter, not the Washington Post take on the letter, not the New York Times take on the letter, the full letter. Get it out as far and wide as possible. If you need the link, just go to my Twitter account and you can take it from there, at Seth Leibson. No, but the story I did want to kind of add on to, I know it's been covered elsewhere, I think I have a different take, is this story of Ellen DeGeneres and George W. Bush. So she was at a Dallas Cowboys football game with him in a box over the weekend and got a lot of pushback. Why would a good, woke, lefty comedian sit with George W. Bush, spend leisure time with him? She got a lot of pushback on social media. And on her show, she responded and said this.
I want to talk about something that happened this weekend. I know it's Tuesday. Sometimes I like to ruminate on things all day Monday so that on Tuesday you hear about it. So this weekend I went to Dallas for the Cowboys game. And thanks. And it may not seem like a big deal for a celebrity to attend a football game, but I never leave my house, so it is a big deal. I go through the drive-thru at Wendy's, so I only have to see one person. that kind of person. So there were 100,000 people in this stadium. Beautiful stadium, by the way, that Dallas has. So Portia and I were invited by Charlotte Jones. She's the daughter of Jerry Jones, who owns the Dallas Cowboys. And we went because we wanted to keep up with the Joneses. So anyway, so we get to sit in this very fancy suite because, you know, he owns the whole place. So his suite is fancy, and he's got fancy friends. And I don't mean fancy like Real Housewife fancy. I mean like fancy. Look, this is, I took a video of who was next to me.
And she's showing George W. Bush and Laura Bush. I'm told there's about 4.3 million viewers of Ellen's show, which is significant for daytime. Significant.
Yeah. Fancy. So that was Portia, and that was Charlotte Jones Portia was talking to, and George W. Bush, and then in front of us was the tallest man in the world. And so I've got to say, when we were invited, I was aware that I was going to be surrounded with people from very different views and beliefs. And I'm not talking about politics. I was rooting for the Packers, and get this, everybody in the Cowboys suite was rooting for the Cowboys. And so I had to hide my cheese hat in Porsche's purse. And don't get me wrong, I like the Cowboys. I love the Cowboys. I love all the Village people, as a matter of fact. But Aaron Rodgers is a friend of mine. He's the quarterback for the Packers, and so I'm sitting in the Cowboys suite, the owner of the Cowboys, and secretly cheering every time the Packers scored or every time another whistleblower came forward. And the referees, you guys, the referees. But during the game, they showed a shot of George and me laughing together, and so... People were upset. They thought, why is a gay Hollywood liberal sitting next to a conservative Republican president? Didn't even notice I'm holding the brand new iPhone 11. And
kind of funny.
But a lot of people were mad, and they did what people do when they're mad. They tweet. But here's one tweet that I loved. This person says, Ellen and George Bush together makes me have faith in America again. And exactly. Here's the thing. I'm friends with George Bush. In fact, I'm friends with a lot of people who don't share the same beliefs that I have. We're all different, and I think that we've forgotten that that's okay that we're all different. For instance, I wish people wouldn't wear fur. I don't like it, but I'm friends with people who wear fur. And I'm friends with people who are furry, as a matter of fact. I have friends who should tweeze more. And I have... But just because I don't agree with someone on everything doesn't mean that I'm not going to be friends with them. When I say be kind to one another, I don't mean only the people that think the same way that you do. I mean be kind to everyone. Doesn't matter.
Okay. This got a lot of celebration. That's good, Chris. Thank you for that. That last point applies to the First Amendment. It's not, and the left needs to remember this, or be taught it in the first place. It's not for speech you agree with. It may not even be for popular speech. If it were speech you agreed with or that the majority agreed with or that was only covering popular speech, there would be no need for the protection of that speech. It's to prevent a tyranny of the majority from overriding minority viewpoints in this country, because it is supposed to be a country that is an open society that allows for the tolerance of various opinions. Maybe not principles, but certainly opinions. That's one thing, her thing about being kind to people that you don't necessarily agree with. That's an important one. There's a couple other things in here. There is in it just a little bit of moral superiority. I don't know if you notice it. It's a little bit of moral superiority that comes from her being greater than George W. Bush, that she gets to be celebrated for liking him. There's no effort or celebration of George W. Bush for liking her, is there? For being able to be friendly with her. And why is that, by the way? Why is that? You know why that is? Because there is no conservative in the country that tweeted about their objection of him sitting with her. This is not something conservatives care about. Conservatives know that it's okay to like people of different points of view. This is almost entirely a problem exclusive to the left, who don't think you can have friends with opinions you disagree with. Conservatives don't shut down, don't isolate, and don't silence or cancel liberals or leftists. It only runs in one direction. That's point two. And then point three, and this might be a little more subtle, but I haven't heard too much commentary about it. Taking nothing from what Ellen said, it was her experience. She addressed it. She did a good job of it. I'm glad she said it. It's important. But George W. Bush is the safe one. He's the safe conservative to like. You know, it's always easy to be friends with the guy, the conservative, the Republican, who's no longer in power and no longer running for anything. Be a little bit different, I betcha, if it were, you know, an active Republican or an active sitting Republican president. You take my point on this? I hope so. I hope so. It's always easy to like the guy who's out of power and perhaps even passed away. You know, your Barry Goldwaters, your John McCain's. But back when they were running and when they were in power, the leftist media was as hard on them as they are on Trump. I don't want us to forget that. And I want to give credit to Ellen, but I did want to hang a few asterisks on the point, good though it was, that she made. It was safe. And it was also, interestingly enough, only something leftists needed to hear. I'm Seth. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. I always just pause a little on Frank Sinatra. Solomon is in Glendale. Hello, Solomon. Welcome to the show. I should say welcome back. If my counting is right, this is your second call to us.
Yes, sir.
I'm glad to have you. Thank you.
Glad to be here, and thank you very much for taking my call and all you do.
Let me give you a compliment. My math is right. You are also the first to retweet the entire transcript of the letter from the White House counsel to the impeachment Democrats. So thank you for doing that, Solomon.
Absolutely.
You bet.
Yeah, So I use Twitter a little bit as a tool, as I alluded to Friday when we spoke. And it kind of goes along with everything that I called about here. So the first thing is the Ellen thing. I think it's neat. I agree with you. It's neat that she sat with George W., and it's neat that she kind of fired back a little bit at the crowd that got angry.
A little bit, yes.
Good for her.
And maybe just enough. Yeah, good for her. But there were a few extra points I just needed to make about it. But yes, good for her. You bet.
And I agree with you. I absolutely agree with you. And to take your last point just a little bit further.
Sure.
You know, at the risk of asking just a little too much of, you know, the little bit of, what was the word you used? Not holier than thou, but a little bit of, how you used a phrase.
I'm not sure, but let me restate the last point if it's the one you're thinking of, which was how it's always safe to praise the Republican who's no longer a threat.
Yes, and there's a phrase that you use that has to do with the fact that Ellen kind of just acts like she's in
a
the
little
right
morally
and, you know,
superior. Yeah, there was a little moral. Yeah, there was a little bit of that in her needing
superior
to defend Bush, whereas no one ever thought Bush would have to defend her. But yes, she was like the more important of the two people, which is kind of interesting.
Which is kind of the way it always is with the left and the right. I mean, we can be honest about that. We see it. Some don't admit it, but we certainly see it. It's the same breakdown of, oh, well, CNN, MSNBC, they're honest, Fox News lies. It's the same thing.
Right. I mean, it is odd that a celebrity has to say it's okay to sit with a former two-time elected president of the United States as if she's the important person here. Yes, of course. Right.
Yeah. So pat me on the back.
Yes.
Just
there was
president.
A little bit of that there. It may not have been intentional. But I heard it. That's what I heard anyway.
Yeah. So to carry that a little further, though, with the President Trump thing, and this goes back to, you know, maybe I'm thinking a little bit too far along, but I think Mike Gallagher talked about this morning a little bit. You know, be nice to everybody is wonderful. We all should. And I think that I do my best to do that absolutely as a conservative, as a Christian, as a man of God. It's what I believe. It's what I'm taught. It's what we should do. What about the idea that she had, when President Trump was first elected, said that she would never have him on her show because he stands for everything that she's against or something to that effect? I'm paraphrasing. You know, step it up a little bit, Ellen. Have the current sitting president on your show, even if you vehemently disagree with everything that he stands for.
Maybe.
Okay.
Let me push back with you on that a little, Solomon, and maybe you're right and maybe I'm wrong. I don't have trouble with personalities or hosts not giving air to people they don't want to. For example, couldn't that same thing be said of me, Seth? Why don't you have I don't know, pick someone. Why don't you have Beto O'Rourke on your show? Maybe. I mean, I it's something to contemplate, but I shouldn't be forced as a moral issue to have him on my show.
And I agree.
But there is also another difference, and the other difference is, you know, we're unique. Conservatives that have a microphone are unique, and we're here as a minority voice because we're up against the entire age and culture, which is liberal. You know, the entire age and culture owns the microphone, but for about, you know, 10 well-known national hosts and a handful of we local hosts, right?
Sure.
So
yeah.
Anyway, but I'm sort of with you, but I just sort of not. I'm 50-50 with you if you get
well,
my drift.
I'm not saying that she has to or that she
right.
should be pushed to. I'm thinking that it would be, if she wants to be morally right.
Yes, yes, yes.
In her own accord, she could take the next level step
sure.
and say, hey, you know, I did this the other day, Tuesday, a couple days out from Sunday,
yeah.
and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And you know what? I want to invite President Trump onto the show. And so maybe, just as a counterpoint to your point, Raul Grijalva, he's local to Arizona,
sure.
right?
Sure.
Wouldn't you have him on your show
yes.
to debate him on the issue?
Yes, yes, I have invited others to come on
the
and
former
debate.
Former mayor of Phoenix,
yes.
who now is a congressman,
yes.
Mayor Stanton, correct?
Yes.
Didn't you invite him on your show?
I don't remember,
a number of times?
But I could see myself doing it. I honestly don't remember.
And if you didn't, it was another local guy.
I could see myself doing it.
I
could see it. I might have, and I could see myself doing it. And there are reporters and op-ed columnists I have invited to debate that have turned me down.
Yeah.
So, yes, yes. You're not wrong on that point. You're not wrong. I just don't think – okay, I'm going to admit you're more right and I'm more wrong on this. I'll just back off. You have the better
okay.
point. You have the better point. My first thought was not the right one. Yours was.
I think we both have good sound reasons behind what we think,
okay.
to be fair now. So to expand on that and what I talked to you about last week was the thing with Candace Owens and the Black Summit at the White House and the fact that the Jake Tapper tweet that I mentioned to you and the fact that the narrative coming out of the media was about the fact that President Trump had Candace Owens on and she said this bombastic thing about CNN being full of lies and yada yada. And there's a firewall. You know it. I know it. Chuck Todd clearly just put it on display with
right.
his interview with Ron Johnson, is it?
Yes,
the senator
it is.
From
That's right. That's right.
Minnesota.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was a disgraceful display of partisanship
you
on
bet.
What is supposed to be the most respected Sunday morning
once
talk
upon,
show.
Yes,
and
you bet. Once upon a time it was.
Once upon a time,
yeah.
Tim Russert
right.
and even David Gregory, you know,
right.
people nitpicked with him, but he was much more fair. And you know, I watch Chris Wallace, and I wonder about him sometimes and what he's trying to do, but he tries really hard, I think, to do the right thing.
I think he does, too. I think what he does, Solomon, I'll tell you what I think he does. I think he feels, you know, he comes from a long line of, well, his dad. He comes from that lineage.
Yeah.
And I think once in a while he just feels like he has to show liberal credentials. I think that's what he's doing. I think.
I would say that's fair.
And I wouldn't
I
say he's necessarily
a
conservative. I think what I would say
yeah.
is he's a little more fair than most media. That's how I think I would put it about him. A little
yeah.
more fair
yeah.
than most media. Yeah.
But Seth, how do we break, as an individual on the street, me, because
yeah.
you have the microphone, and thank you for sharing your microphone with all of us.
Thank you.
But otherwise, aside from you put out a document on Twitter
right.
and I retweet it,
right.
I do things like that as much as possible. There was a real clear politics story today about the Chuck Todd thing that I retweeted and made a little statement about. And there are a number of us, obviously, that do that kind of thing. I mean, is that... Are we at our wit's end with that?
No,
What else do we do?
Yeah, let me talk about it on the other side of a break. Let me put you on hold and come back on that point because we've got to hit a hard break. Solomon, thank you for everything. We'll be right back. You know, I'm just amazed at the run of Jimmy Buffett. You've heard me on this before. It's an amazing thing to me. He still does sell-out stadium concerts. He's been doing this since about 1970. He's probably put out about 30 or more albums, and there's only like three or four of his songs that ever got radio play. That's one of them, Come Monday. It might have been the first one that got radio play. It's that, it's Margaritaville, maybe Changes in Attitudes, and maybe Cheeseburger. Speaking of cheeseburgers, let me tell you that if you're feeling run down and don't have the energy that you used to, it's probably because you're not eating enough fruits and vegetables. It's time to try Balance of Nature's fruits and vegetables in capsule form. Balance of Nature is not like ordinary vitamins that are made with synthetics. It's just natural food in a vegetarian capsule with tens of thousands of vital nutrients from 100% fruits, vegetables, and whole food plants. A daily dose of Balance of Nature capsules has 10 servings of 31 different fruits and vegetables. Once you start taking Balance of Nature, you'll feel great. People report that their skin looks better and they have a lot more energy. It's time to improve the quality of your life. Experience the Balance of Nature difference for yourself. Call or go online now and become a preferred customer, which gets you their best pricing and free shipping. And they'll take off an additional $25 on your first order as well. And this is a limited time offer, so don't wait. Call 800-246-8751 or go to balanceofnature.com and use discount code BALANCE. Rob is in Surprise. Hello, Rob.
Well, hi, Seth. Long time no talk.
How you been? You? How you doing?
I'm good. And by the way, I got the input to follow Solomon on Twitter, so thank you for that.
Yeah, we're building a nice community and seminar here. I want all of our listeners to follow each other on Twitter.
Yeah.
If people want my Twitter handle, it's at Seth Liebson. You're happy and free to mention yours if you want, Rob. I won't out you if you don't want to.
There's no outing to be had. Anyway, and by the way, I'm honored to be on the same show that you had John Hinderaker and Andy Biggs on. I'm humbled and honored to be part of your show.
Well, thanks.
One of the things I wanted to talk about, and actually, by the way, when you mentioned a couple times earlier, fundamental fairness, I believe in that too, except I don't think the left, the liberals, and the media, the Democrats really believe in that. That's kind of a separate issue.
It is, but I think the vast majority of Americans do. Aren't necessarily totally in the partisan camp of life in the world, right? 325 million Americans. How many are hardened partisans on the Democratic side? I don't know, 40 million? 30 million?
Darn good question.
Yeah.
Were you ever a Monty Python fan?
Of course.
Okay.
Should you start again?
Now,
amongst your greatest elements are surprise and fear and ruthless devotion.
I want to mention, and now for something completely different.
Okay.
What I've been thinking a lot about in the last few days was the whole withdrawal of our troops from Syria.
Okay.
And I had been doing a lot of research and reading, and I understand that, you know, Lindsey Graham and key officials in the Defense Department, John Bolton and General Mattis and Nikki Haley, they're all against this pullout. And again, that's what the media ends up reporting. And I read this great article from Pamela Geller, on the Geller Report, and it was actually written by
Noni Darwish, yeah.
Yeah. What is not being reported is that, you know, the reason the U.S. went into Syria was not to save the Kurds.
That's correct.
Or ISIS.
That's correct.
Okay. And the Kurds, many of whom are socialists, know, by the way, there's Kurds in Syria, there's Kurds in Iraq, there's Kurds in Turkey.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got the PKK thing in Turkey in particular. And their historical origin actually came out of Iran. And what most people probably don't know either is that they're not Arab.
Right.
So now the
president, as Iranians are not Arab. Right.
Yeah. And one of the things that the president had talked about was that, you know, he wants us to get out of these endless wars.
Right. He did campaign on it. He did campaign on that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So here's an example of a guy trying to keep his campaign promises, and yet the media reports that all these important people are kind of against this whole thing, and, you know, they're going to abandon allies and this and that. Well, that may be true, but the whole thing has to do with the history of the region. And the region, obviously you have divisions between Sunnis and Shiites. You have divisions between Arabs and non-Arabs.
And Sunnis and Sunnis.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Sunnis and Sunnis. And then you've got even, there's like four or five different factions within the Kurdish.
I got to hit a hard break. You want to hold the point for a second, Rob?
Absolutely.
All right, you're on to, yeah, I'll be right back. Seth Leibson here with Rob, 602-508-0960. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. I am Seth. Robin Surprise was talking to us about another major story that hasn't gotten enough attention because, of course, impeachment is sucking the oxygen out of so many important things. Rob, thank you. Thank you for staying with us. Go ahead, sir.
Well, thank you, Seth. I mean, you know, this is kind of an issue that goes into the whole, you know, globalist versus what Trump believes is America first issue. And I think his decision to pull, and again, we're only talking about 1,000 troops.
If that.
So
I want to underscore that. This is an important point.
Yeah.
Let me just have it for a second, Rob.
Sure.
When the stories came out on the withdrawal from Syria yesterday, there were exclamation points and high dudgeon everywhere, and you could search in vain in every major news story. You could not find how the number of troops that were involved in Syria that the president is taking out. Wonder why that was. Do you realize how few troops we're talking about? We're talking about than 1,000. Less than there is a reason the media did not give you that number. Go ahead.
Well, of course. And in addition, I mean, all they published was the anti-decision from Lindsey Graham, from key officials in the Defense Department, you know, John Bolton and his recent firing, I guess, General Mattis. And then I think Nikki Haley even got her 2 cents worth in.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, while that sounds good, and again, the media reports that stuff that makes Trump look bad, I think there are more bigger picture issues that involve wisdom and involve an understanding of history that the media never reports. I mean, when you think about it, you know, why must the U.S. be the only country to fix problems, especially in the Middle East? And then what are the NATO allies and the Gulf Cooperation Council doing? And what if there are regional players who could solve their own problems, well, or not? And what would change if we withdrew in 1 year, 10 years, 20 years? How long would it take these people to have a stay, and would it really matter if we did stay longer? And if we stayed, would anything really change in that region? And I think that's one of the big problems that people that don't understand or get history, when you think about, you know, the British tried to do all this in the early 20th century, you know, when they drew lines in the Middle East, and they didn't take into account both in Africa and the Middle East, actually, tribal issues and differences between different cultures. We are not the ones who can solve those kinds of problems. And I'm kind of surprised that it's not being discussed more in the media, and also, I guess in the media because it's all anti-Trump anyway, but I'm surprised that there's no wisdom anywhere, whether it's the media or whether it's in Washington. And I understand that, you know, the political people want to, you know, give their 2 cents worth, but they may not be right.
That's such an important point. They may not be right. So let me do this as briefly and as soberly as I can. And let me also, before I do so, mention that if I'm right, you are a man that wore the uniform of the United States, yes?
Yeah, for 24 and a half years.
So we're talking to someone who has that experience with him as well.
Oh, yeah. And by the way, Seth, if anything, I would want the American people to know that nobody hates war more than the people in uniform.
Perfect.
Because
of course.
They are the ones,
right, of course,
that have to pay the price
of
for
course
the political decisions in
of
Washington.
Course. Of course.
That, you know, we learned back in Vietnam,
right,
the best and the brightest weren't really the best and the brightest.
Or telling the truth. So let me.
Or telling, exactly.
And neither was the media either. I mean, that went around all over. But let me try it this way. So the tension, sober intellectual tension is this. I think it's fair to say we have learned hard. We have learned the hard lesson that an angry and failed society or country abroad,
yes,
is not something we can tolerate if they have intentions to do U.S. allies or the U.S. harm. That's point one. What you do with that is, of course, a second consideration, which takes us to the third consideration, which is your point. What does 1,000 troops in Syria do? Because a lot of us have memories of not substantial enough numbers of troops in places like, Lebanon in the early 80s, let's say.
There you go.
Which takes us to point four, which is we are in Iraq and Afghanistan by the thousands, tens of thousands right now, still,
yes,
where sons, yes, are fighting, in some cases, the wars their fathers were in, which is unheard of,
exactly,
in the history of the United States. And, and the question has to be asked, to what end? What does success,
exactly,
look like? And can it be achieved? And these are the hard questions. We all start off on premise one. I hope we do. I hope we understand premise one, which is failed and angry societies with weapons that want to do us or our allies harms is intolerable. I hope we can agree on that. Two through five, we don't have agreement on. But even where we say it's important not to leave for importance of not leaving sake, we never seem to ask the question that you ask, which is so important, Rob, which is, what does success look like? And can we achieve it? If we have spent 18 years trying to achieve success in places like Afghanistan and Iraq and have gotten to such a wretched point where we're actually negotiating with the enemy we were sent there to fight, I say, my gosh, bring them home.
No one in
2002 thought we would be sitting down to negotiate with the Taliban for the sake of God. If that's what it takes to have success, that was the cause of the failure in the first place, bring them home.
Well, absolutely. And I think that goes back to those who believed in nation building, which was totally wrong. They wanted the military.
If they can show me where it's worked, and I'm guilty of this, I was a supporter of at least the interventions. I don't think we did them right. I think you can go in and protect and defend and be lightning and shock and awe, but we did not do that. We did not do that.
Well,
if we had to take Fallujah four times, it means we didn't take them the first three times.
Well, that's right. And I think there were people in, maybe it's the deep state, maybe in the State Department and somewhere else in Washington, the Defense Department, that thought that we could nation build, and nation building is not something we should be responsible
for.
Agreed. So we're on the same page.
This was not an insubstantial part of Donald Trump's support in 2016, by the way. This was not an insubstantial portion of the support he received. He was one of the first candidates in either party to say this, because there is a Republican-Democrat consensus, to my dismay, frankly, at this point in the game, on that. And Donald Trump broke that consensus, and a lot of people agreed with him. I had Zudi Jasser on with me about 3 weeks ago, and he said, I can't believe I'm saying this, but it's time to leave Afghanistan. And I said, I can't believe I am either, but it is. Right. It's gotten to that point. Bring him home. Welcome back, and thank you for spending some of your afternoon with us. We had a heck of a show today, didn't we, Chris? I want to thank you again, by the way, for stepping into the producer's job today. Bill will be back with us tomorrow. Thank you for everything you did today, Chris. Appreciate it very much, as I appreciate you. To sum up where we began, I do want you to read the letter Pat Cipollone, the White House counsel, wrote to the impeachment Democrats. I want you to read it in its full. It's 8 pages. And I want you to take the link and spread it out across any social media opportunities you have, Twitter, Facebook. If you need to know where to get the link, you can go to my Twitter feed. I posted it at Seth Liebson is my Twitter handle. Because I do think it gets to something that does, as I said, regardless of party, regardless of ideological predilection, I think does still beat strongly in the American heart, and that is fundamental fairness. I think fundamental fairness still appeals in America. And when you read this letter, you get to see just who is doing the shredding of the Constitution and just who is being treated unfairly in a quasi-legal, quasi-political process, which is in any event an extraordinary process of impeachment. By extraordinary, I mean extraordinary. Think about it. Two presidents have been literally impeached in the history of the United States. Two. One of them most Americans don't even know about, Andrew Johnson. Nixon wasn't really impeached. There were impeachment proceedings that were commencing, but he resigned. And Bill Clinton was impeached. That's it. Two presidents have been impeached. It is an extraordinary thing to do. It has never been done right before a re-election campaign. In the cases of Johnson or Nixon or Clinton, it was done after they were reelected. Certainly never been done 13 months before an election. And I'll just give you the words that start off this 8-page letter that I think it's important every American see. To the Democrats, you have denied the president the right to cross-examine witnesses, to call witnesses, to receive transcripts of testimony, to have access to evidence, to have counsel present, and many other basic rights guaranteed to all Americans. You have conducted your proceedings in secret. You have violated civil liberties and the separation of powers by threatening executive branch officials, claiming that you will seek to punish those who exercise fundamental constitutional rights and prerogatives. All of this is a violation of the Constitution, the rule of law, and every past precedent. Never before in our history has the House of Representatives, under the control of either party, taken the American people down the dangerous path you are determined to pursue. Keep this in mind, folks. You keep hearing from the Democrats the president is not above the law. Quite right. Quite right. But neither are they. And I'll tell you something else. The president is not below the law either. Now think about using an anonymous witness or whistleblower. Call him whatever you want. An anonymous person. An anonymous person whose testimony will be the basis of the extraordinary effort to impeach a president. Think about that. One man who now we learn has ties to the Democrats running for president. That's not America. See you tomorrow.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.